You show it in everything you do, every chance you get. Closers are called closers for a reason. They show up at the end. They can deliver in a pressure situation because they step up when something is on the line. For cleaners, every moment is a pressure situation, and everything is always on the line. Honestly, if I were you, I'd be insulted if someone said I had a clutch gene. It's not a compliment when people say you step up for the big games. Where were you all the other games? Why weren't you that solid and aggressive and effective all the time? Look, I get the impact of a guy who sinks the winning shot or blasts the walk-off home run or drives down the field and throws the winning TD with 2 seconds on the clock. I understand the satisfaction of being the guy who gets everyone what they need when they need it. I get the drama and thrill and intensity of succeeding in that moment and going home a hero. But being relentless means constantly working for that result, not just when drama is on the line. Clutch is about the last minute. Relentless is about every minute. Because if you're content to wait until that last minute, you are way too safe the rest of the time, taking it easy, coasting along in your comfort zone. A lot of guys won't take that last shot, not because they're afraid they'll miss, but because if they make it, they have to keep making it. Look at Jeremy Lin. He exploded out of nowhere to play at such a high level for the Knicks, and everyone expected him to stay at that level, which just wasn't going to happen. When you start that high, you have a lot farther to fall, and you hit the ground a lot harder from that height. For a lot of guys, it's easier to stay in the comfort zone, close to the ground. Minimal expectations, minimal pressure, minimal rewards, but you're safe. Cleaners crave that height, along with the pressure of staying up there and going higher and higher. As soon as they start relaxing for just a moment, they instantly feel as if they're slacking. If you're a cleaner, you know that intense rush of needing to control something, attack something right now. Never, ever do you go through a day thinking, "Well, that was relaxing." To a cleaner, relaxing is something weaker people do because they can't handle pressure. Put him in a situation where he's supposed to be relaxed, such as a vacation he didn't really want to take, or a day he doesn't have to work out, and he'll actually become more stressed thinking about what he should have been doing. He'd rather deal with a challenge than put the effort into unwinding. He likes being wound. When a cleaner wants a break from the pressure he puts on himself, he escapes to the dark side. Something else for him to control, a temporary fix that maintains the pressure but allows him to shift his focus from one addiction to another for a while. Instead of working, he reaches for sex. Instead of competing, he goes for the bottle. Instead of obsessing about his finances, he goes to the gym to obsess about his body. Still, all about pressure, performance, and pushing the edge of his comfort zone back farther and farther just to test his own limits, assuming he has any. A cleaner controls the pressure he feels, and he never looks to anyone else to help him control it. This is why I think of LeBron as a closer, not a cleaner. When nothing is handed to you, as in Dwayne's case, going to a small high school and a small college, you have to prove yourself every day, over and over. The internal pressure to establish yourself as the best is unrelenting. But when you walk in the door with everyone already telling you you're the best, it's a lot easier to believe. LeBron has been on a pedestal since he was in high school, got the big shoe deal and the billboards before he had done anything, shook up the entire league with the ordeal over the decision. People who had never watched a basketball game in their lives were asking where LeBron was going to play. Plenty of pressure in that, absolutely. But when you consider he was going to play alongside two other elite players, Dwayne and Chris Bosh, and was surrounded by an outstanding collection of other players, you realize he had a lot of latitude to spread that pressure around. You want to make comparisons? Think about Kobe's reign in L.A. Michael's years with the Bulls, Dwayne before the Big Three, even Derrick Rose in Chicago. Those are guys who at some point looked around at the rest of the league and thought, I don't want to join you, I want to beat you. And when a newcomer shows up, they're all thinking the same thing. You can join me, but I'm not joining you. When Dwight Howard and Steve Nash joined the Lakers before the 2012-2013 season, all eyes were on the dynamic of Kobe and his new teammates. Would they share the starting roles? Was Kobe handing over the leadership role? Were the new Lakers going to get more attention than the originals? Kobe shut that down right away. I don't want to get into, well, we share, he told reporters. No, it's my team. I own this. I understand the desire of great players to play alongside other great players, but use the opportunity to jack up the pressure, not dial it down. Forge that partnership so you can become even more competitive and intense, not so you can share the pressure and take less responsibility. When LeBron finally got a ring, everyone was saying, finally, the pressure is off. Are you kidding me? The pressure just quadrupled. Now, you have to get started on doing it again, so you can do it again the year after that. Anyone who is content with one ring and doesn't feel the pressure to earn another needs to retire, effective immediately. I always felt Michael's legendary trash-talking wasn't meant for the other guy. It was another way for him to heighten the pressure he put on himself, because once you've told others how bad you're about to fuck them up, you're going to have to deliver on that promise. I tell my guys, pressure, pressure, pressure. Most people run from stress. I run to it. Stress keeps you sharp. It challenges you in ways you never imagined and forces you to solve issues and manage situations that send weaker people running for cover. You can't succeed without it. Your level of success is defined by how well you embrace it and manage it. Because if you don't manage it well, the other guy is waiting to find your weakness, and the moment you show it, he'll attack. Exactly what you should do when someone shows weakness. During the 2012 NBA Finals, Oklahoma City's Serge Ibaka decided to test how well LeBron was managing the pressure he felt to carry the Heat to a championship. LeBron's mental toughness had been a question for a long time. When he was seriously stressed, he started biting his nails and chewing his fingers. When I saw him doing it during the championship series, I turned to ESPN Stephen A. Smith and said, "He just checked out. The minute he does that, he's gone." This time, fortunately for the Heat, he was able to come back. In the past, I have seen him at a free throw line, at home in front of his own fans, giving them the quiet down arms as if they're being too loud and distracting him. That's how you know the emotion has taken over. So Ibaka goes right at that emotion and tells the media before Game 4 that LeBron can't defend Kevin Durant by himself, which of course set the media on fire to get a response from LeBron, who said he wasn't going to comment, and then commented at length. That's a closer. Thinking about it, allowing it to become a distraction, feeling the pressure to prove something. A cleaner doesn't respond to external pressure. He puts the pressure back on the guy trying to get under his skin by refusing to acknowledge him. Remember, you don't compete with anyone. You make them compete with you. You can control what you put on yourself. You can't control what the other guy puts on you. So you focus only on the internal pressure that drives you. Run to it. Embrace it. Feel it. So no one else can throw more at you than you've already put on yourself. Like this. During the 2010 season, the Lakers were playing Orlando, and Matt Barnes was playing for the Magic. The entire game, Barnes did everything possible to antagonize Kobe, including faking the ball at his face, maybe 1 inch from his nose. Kobe never reacted, never flinched, not once. After the game, reporters asked how he was able to not respond. His answer? Why should I? I don't want to hear that someone can't handle pressure. Everyone can handle pressure. Most people choose not to because it's easier to stay safe in the comfort zone. But if you want to be successful, to have that place in the sun, then you have to leave the shade. It's not easy to leave the shade. It's cool and comfortable compared to the hot discomfort of the sun. But you can't be relentless if you can't take discomfort, and you can't be unstoppable if you only deal with pressure when you have no choice. Pressure can bust pipes, but it can also make diamonds. If you take the negative view, it'll crush you. Now you're in an I can't do this frame of mind. But the positive view is that pressure is a challenge that will define you. It gives you the opportunity to see how much you can take, how hard you can go. Everyone wants to cut back on stress because stress kills. I say bullshit. Stress is what brings you to life. Let it motivate you, make you work harder. Use it. Don't run from it. When it makes you uncomfortable, so what? The payoff is worth it. Work through the discomfort. You'll survive. And then, go back for more. Of course, you have to be able to recognize the difference between stress that can bring great results and stress you create yourself that just causes chaos. Showing up unprepared, not putting in the work, blowing off commitments and obligations, that's the stuff that creates pointless stress. You had the option to manage those things before they turned into negative situations. But when you're faced with the stress of great challenges set before you, making the team, working for a raise, finishing a job, winning a championship, undeniable gifts are buried under all that pressure. Not everyone gets the opportunity to be stressed by the potential to achieve exceptional things. But you have to keep that pressure turned up all the time, not just when you need to take it up a notch. In my business, I start to see guys slipping away around March, when they start thinking about the playoffs. The constant pressure starts taking a toll. The mental and physical fatigue starts to become a factor. They get lazy at practice. They stop putting in the extra work, and inevitably, it starts to affect their whole game. They just hit the wall. And what kills me is that the guys who quit first aren't the leaders with all the pressure on them. It's the other guys who can't stay engaged all season. The leaders don't have the luxury of checking out. It's one thing when you're in an individual sport. If you quit, you quit on yourself. With a team sport, you have a lot of other people relying on you, and you know that every day someone is mentally taking the day off, so you're going to have to cover for him. But you don't know who it's going to be, who's showing up to play, who's not really showing up at all, until you're right there in the middle of the situation. So there's even more pressure to figure out what you're working with. And eventually, even the leaders start to drift. At that point, I'll sit down with my guys and say, guess what? Your team isn't even in the playoffs yet. Wake the hell up, because here's what you get if you make the playoffs and stay in the playoffs. A ring and all the glory that goes along with it. And here's what you get if you don't make the playoffs. You get to go home. You had a great season? So what? Those other guys had great seasons. They're still playing, and you're not. It's not enough to get to the top. You have to stay there. Feel that pressure and fight to stay there. You have to work for that. It's not owed to you. And that's how you know when the great ones are finally done. They no longer want to keep fighting the fight. They know what they've accomplished, and they make the choice to stop cranking up the pressure. And it's always a choice, completely in their control. I saw it in Michael when he went to play in Washington. The psychological aspect of being Michael Jordan, what that represented to so many people around the world, craving that pressure and turning it into diamonds every day, year after year, constantly striving to be better than the best, when you're already the best. Eventually, you just have to say, enough. This is who I'm going to be now. The fire was still there, but not that desire to make it hotter and hotter. And he was still the only player ever over the age of 40 to score more than 50 points in a game. Even then, He'd still do something to thrill the crowd. His way of saying, just because I don't, doesn't mean I can't. Letting the next opponent know he was still there to be dealt with. He still craved the pressure. Still had fun finding ways to crush the other guy. No question in my mind he could have kept playing. When you deal with stress all the time, it becomes second nature. It's still not easy or effortless, but you handle things without panicking because you have experience in accepting the rigors of complex challenges. When you never have to take on anything harder than your daily routine, when you shy away from anything that rocks your sense of safety and control, you're much more likely to fall apart at the first twinge of pressure. Cleaners never feel external pressure. They only believe what's inside them. You can criticize, analyze, demonize a cleaner, but he's still only going to feel pressure from within. He knows what he's doing right and what he's doing wrong. He doesn't care what you think. He steps out of his comfort zone and challenges himself to get to the next level. It all goes back to confidence. When you're challenged, do you bring the pressure, or do you let the other guy push you into a corner? Do you feel trapped like a rat, or do you attack first? Do you pull back, afraid of the fight, or do you make the other guy get in the mud with you? Wounds heal. Scars don't. Those are your combat medals. In the MJ days, we'd say, go get some on ya. Go get dirty. When you're a cleaner, when everyone is hitting the in case of emergency button, they're all looking for you. A cooler waits for you to tell him the plan. A closer works on the plan, studies it, memorizes it, and knows exactly what he has to do. But a cleaner doesn't want a specific plan. He wants every possible option available to him at all times. Every season, it's a lock that on the first day of October training camp, my phone will start blowing up with calls and texts from players who spent the summer living the NBA lifestyle and suddenly realize, damn, I forgot to get ready to play. Or I get the agents and the GMs calling in a panic because they finally figured out that their main guy didn't do the work over the summer, and now they're all going to have to figure it out on the fly. In case of emergency, break glass. By the time I get that call, I know plenty of others have tried and failed to get control, and they're out of answers and options. If you're a cleaner, you know what I mean. Everyone else wanted to handle the situation themselves, and when they finally realized they couldn't, they all came looking for you. And in most cases, you knew it was coming. You just watched and waited. Now everyone is watching you to see how you're going to manage a situation that seems unmanageable. And you'd better be able to figure it out fast. When I arrived in Miami to help Dwayne during the 2012 finals, I knew two things. I was walking into a situation that was already damaged, and I was supposed to do what no one else had been able to do. Dwayne's main concern was whether I could help his injured knee in such a short window of time, or if it was too late to do anything for the remainder of the playoffs. The Heat were already headed into Game 3. I was honest. Here's what I can do and can't do. You're going to need surgery after the season. If you're looking for me to help you avoid the surgery, it's not going to happen. But can I get you through a 7-game series? Absolutely. Will you feel better? Yes, you will definitely feel better. I am 100% certain that if you bring me into any situation, I'm going to have a positive impact on you. There's no way I'm going to show up and not be prepared and not have something to offer you. If you're willing to listen to what I'm asking you, tell me what I need to know, and follow what I say, you're going to have some improvement. If that sounds like arrogant swagger, fine with me. I'm confident in what I do because I know whatever happens, I'm going to adjust and keep rolling. Not everything works the first time. Sometimes it doesn't work at all. But there's a difference between confidence and cockiness. Confidence means recognizing something isn't working and having the flexibility and knowledge to make adjustments. Cockiness is the inability to admit when something isn't working and repeating the same mistakes over and over because you stubbornly can't admit you're wrong. When I talk to a team's training staff about one of my clients, telling them what we've been doing and what they had to do to keep our guy healthy, at some point I'm probably going to hear, "Right, sounds great, but that's not really how we do it here." Well, yeah, if that were how you did it, I wouldn't be here. But I am here, and now you have to adapt to what I'm telling you works for him. My job is no different from that of a corporate troubleshooter who comes in to turn around a troubled business, or a general manager hired to put together a winning team. When what you're doing isn't working, find someone who can make it work, and then let him do it. That's the cleaner's job. Not everyone wants that job. It leaves you completely exposed and open to all kinds of criticism and scrutiny. But it never occurred to me that if Dwayne's knee worsened, or if he had a couple of bad games, it would somehow reflect on me, that people would say, "Grover couldn't get it done." I just don't think that way. It would certainly have been easier to stay where I was, working with Kobe in Los Angeles, getting ready for the Olympics. I could just have given Dwayne some advice and told him we'd get together over the summer. I hadn't worked closely with him for 2 seasons, so, basically, I had 3 hours to learn about the last 2 years to get through the next 5 days before looking ahead to the next 2 seasons. But when I see a challenge that everyone else has failed to own, I'm going to own it. Because when the series ended, Dwayne was holding up that trophy, and that's the payoff no words can describe. You take the risk to taste that greatness. A cooler takes no risks. A closer takes risks when he can prepare in advance and knows the consequences of failing are minimal. But nothing feels risky to a cleaner. Whatever happens, he'll know what to do. Picture a military operation with a specific tactical strategy. Go into that building, make sure it's empty, go out the red door and into the waiting truck and back before the building blows up. You do exactly as ordered, everything goes according to plan, until you get to the red door. Locked. No other exit. Now what? Panic? Those 10 seconds you spend panicking might be your last. A closer will feel fear first, then fumble for an option. But a cleaner will instantly feel his survival instincts kick in, giving him a rush of options, and he knows one of them will work because he's already considered 30 variables before going into the building. A cooler would never be given that kind of assignment, so we don't even have to address him here. If you're a cleaner, you know that feeling, and you've likely been in that kind of situation when everyone else is freaking out and you just know what to do. You don't even know how, you just know. I'm not talking about winging it or making it up as you go. I'm talking about being so prepared, with so many options and so much experience, that you're truly ready for anything. Some people know without a doubt they'll be okay no matter what happens. Others choke as soon as things go wrong. You see it in sports all the time. A figure skater falls, a quarterback throws a pick, a pitcher gives up a grand slam. Everything that happens after that moment goes one of two ways. The athlete either immediately turns it around and comes back to perform at an insanely high level, or he can't recover and it gets worse from there. Why? Same talent, same routine they've gone through 1,000 times. Why can some adapt to an unexpected twist and others completely fall apart? It's not just a sports phenomenon. You can look all around you and recognize people who can handle anything and others who can handle nothing. What makes the difference? Few people have the ability to adapt on the fly and make quick adjustments that work. You can plan and prepare for 10 different scenarios Be completely ready for every variable you anticipate, and you can be sure there will be an 11th scenario you never saw coming. Most people are ready for one scenario. They can't even envision 10. They're completely paralyzed by all the possible variables. And when one thing goes wrong, they can't adjust. You can practice the same shot over and over and over until you can do it blindfolded. Great. Now can you do it if I hit you with a sandbag while you shoot? Can you focus if I blast horrible music or scream in your face? When you always go according to plan, you get robotic and lose that innate ability to know what to do when plans suddenly change, when you're confronted by the unexpected. But a cleaner can take that same plan, and when something goes off the rails, his instincts immediately take over and he adapts. Doesn't think about it. Doesn't need to be told. He just knows. That's the trademark of a dangerous competitor. He doesn't have to know what's coming because whatever you show him, he's ready. No fear of failure. That's not about the myth of positive thinking. It's about the hard work and preparation that go into knowing everything there is to know. Letting go of your fears and insecurities, and trusting your ability to handle any situation. I'm not saying you can't think about what you have to do, but do your thinking and planning in advance, building your reflexes, so you know when your back is against the wall, you've got the right move. You don't accomplish that by obsessing and worrying until you're an emotional mess, unable to sleep or focus on anything else. You prepare yourself by knowing you're ready with the next bullet to fire. You don't ever have to pull the trigger, but you have to know it's locked and loaded, and available if you need it. How quickly can you make that adjustment if you take the wrong step? Can you recognize the mistake and snap it back? You have to be willing to fail if you're going to trust yourself to act from the gut and then adapt as you go. That's the confidence or swagger that allows you to take risks and know that whatever happens, you'll figure it out. Adapt and adapt again. I don't think you can really understand relentlessness until you've faced your worst fears and you've experienced that internal response telling you what to do. If you think back to the major events in your life, you can probably identify the things that impacted everything else and taught you what you were capable of dealing with. This is one of the ways I learned. My family came to the United States when I was 4, and my father went to work in the basement of a hospital in Chicago, dismembering cadavers. When there was no school and both my parents were working, he'd take me with him. I was 5 years old the first time I saw my father dismantle a corpse. When I was 6, he handed me a bone saw and told me to help. His lesson to me? This is how a man provides for his family. That's how I learned. You figure it out. My parents are from India, and they moved to London after they were married. I was born there. My mother was a nurse, and my parents decided she would go to America to work because they wanted a better life for my brother and me. For a year, she lived alone in Chicago, and the rest of us remained behind until she and my father finally saved enough for all of us to be together. On the day we arrived in Chicago to be reunited as a family, my dad got a cab at the airport, loaded up all our bags and possessions, and we headed toward the city. But a few miles from our destination, he suddenly told the cab to stop. We got out, unloaded all the bags, and started walking. Just 2 little boys who had no idea what was going on, and our dad making it sound as if we were on this great adventure, seeing the city on foot. But the truth was, he didn't have enough money to go any farther by cab. So we carried the bags and walked. He was a dad in a new country with 2 little boys and no money in his pocket. Figure it out, I learned. Even today, he still has that instinctive ability to know whatever he does, it's going to work. And he passed that along to me. Total cleaner. He came from nothing, asked for nothing, and knew he could make it on his own.